चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। देशे शुचौ समे राजन् संस्थापयासनम् आत्मनः स्थिरं सुखं समं तस्मिन् आसीतार्ज्व अंग ओम इति। देशे शुचौ समे राजन् संस्थाप्यासनम् आत्मनः स्थिरं सुखं समं तस्मिन् आसीतार्जव अंग ओम इति। देशे शुचौ समे राजन् संस्थाप्यासनमात्मनः स्थिरं सुखं समं तस्मिन् आसीतार्ज्वंग ओम इति। देशे शुचौ समे राजन् संस्थाप्यासनमात्मनः सिखं सुखं आसीतर्ज्वंग ओम इति। संस्थाप्यासनमात्मनः स्थिरं सुखं समं तस्मिन् आसीतर्ज्वंग ओम इति। लेडीज प्लीज। देशे शुचौ समे राजन् संस्थाप्यासनमात्मनः स्थिरं सुखं समं तस्मिन् आसीतर्ज्व अंग ओम इति। देशे इन ए प्लेस शुचौ वेरी सेक्रेड समे लेवल राजन ओ किंग संस्थाप्य प्लेसिंग आसनम on the seat atmanah one's self sthiram very steady sukham comfortably samam equipoised tasmin on that sitting place asita one should sit down ruju angah the body perpendicularly straight Om, the Vedic mantra pranava, iti, in this way. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My dear king, in a sacred, holy, In a sacred and holy place of pilgrimage, one should select a place in which to perform yoga. The place must be level and not too high or low. There, one should sit very comfortably, being seated steady and equipoised, keeping his body straight, and thus begin chanting the Vedic pranava. Purport. Generally, the chanting of Om is recommended because it is the beginning, because in the beginning, one cannot understand the personality of Godhead. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:11, Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan. Unless one is fully convinced of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has the tendency to become an impersonalist yogi searching for the Supreme Lord within the core of his heart. Dhyana vastita tad gatena manasa pashyanti yam yoginaha. Here the chanting of Omkara is recommended because in the beginning of transcendental realization, instead of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one may chant Omkara Pranava. There is no difference between the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and Omkara because both of them are sound representations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pranavaha Sarva Vedeshu. In all Vedic literatures, the sound vibration Omkara is the beginning. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The difference between chanting Omkara and chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra is that the Hare Krishna Mantra may be chanted without consideration of the place or the sitting arrangements recommended in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 11. Shuchaudeshe pratishthapya sthiramasanamatmanah nati uchritam nati nicham chailanjina kushottaram. To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusha grass on the ground and then cover it with a deer skin and a soft cloth. The seat should neither be too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. The Hare Krishna mantra may be chanted by anyone without consideration of the place or how one sits. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has openly declared, Niyamita smarane na kalaha. In chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, there are no particular injunctions regarding one's sitting place. The injunction, Niyamita smarane na kala, includes desha, kala, and patra, place, time, and the individual. Therefore, anyone may chant the Hare Krishna mantra without consideration of the time and place. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is very difficult to find a suitable place according to the recommendations of Bhagavad Gita. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, however, may be chanted at any place and at any time, and this will bring results very quickly. Yet, even while chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, one may observe regulative principles. Thus, while sitting and chanting, one may keep his body straight, and this will help one in chanting process. Otherwise, one may feel sleepy. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shvasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this verse is indicating that one should find a sacred place, deshe shuchau same. It should be this in a sacred place. One should create a proper sitting place, and one should seat oneself comfortably, and one should chant Om while keeping their body straight and their mind steady, happy, and equipoised. So, the reason this verse is here is because in the previous verse there is a purpose, and the purpose is, as indicated, yaschitta vijaye yataha, one who wants to conquer his mind. So to conquer the mind means what? And we know, as students of Srila Prabhupada, generally the idea of controlling the mind is thought as having no thoughts. So controlling the mind means people try to make the mind blank. And Prabhupada debated against it, that you cannot make the mind blank because that's not the function of the mind. If the mind has to be made blank, he said, then the rock is a better yogi than any one of us, because the rock has no thoughts. It's like saying, I control my car, it does not leave the garage ever. What's the point? What's the point in having a car that you don't drive and you say it's under control? No activity. Does it make any sense? No. So controlling the mind means making our will direct the mind for a particular purpose. And that purpose is to realize our relationship with Krishna. That is control of mind. And the opposite is that the mind directs our will, our individual ability to choose, and the volition is directed by the mind. So we say the mind is out of control, because I want my mind to think this and it thinks that. I don't want my mind to think that, but it forcibly makes me think that. This is out of control. That means my own volition has absolutely no influence on where my mind will go. So for the previous verse, the objective, the goal is to direct the mind, to control the mind. And this is a method. Suchau, they say. Why clean place or a sacred place? Because sacred place has everything that is beneficial for the mind to be cultured. Normally means without the volition to train the mind, we notice that the mind naturally takes us towards ignorance, maybe towards passion, but it's mostly passion and ignorance. Sleep, laziness, tired, defeatist, etc. These are the kinds of the nature of the mind that it takes us towards ignorance. So a dirty place is fine. You know, what's wrong? I've said this in the past. I have a friend at the university that I preach, And he has a t-shirt, was one of my favorite t-shirts. So whenever I'm speaking and he's coming, he wears that t-shirt just for, I guess, a kick for me. And it says, I cleaned my room. I'm paraphrasing. I cleaned my room, which means I made a path from my bed to the door. Because the rest of the room is so cluttered and dirty. And that's okay. And when you ask a person, wow, this whole place is dirty. And they say, dirty? Where? Everything is in its place. That's because ignorance is such that it doesn't tell us the difference between that which is clean and that which is not clean. So the mind by nature takes us towards darkness in its thoughts and its activities and etc. So first is the place to be clean. He says, Shuchau Dese Same Rajam. That one should find a sacred place, clean place. In fact, in our japa retreats, everyone has told that during the retreat or everyday practices, you create what is called the sacred space. Therefore, you notice that every one of us, consciously or unconsciously, put our japa in a particular pattern, where we sit, where we walk. We all have our favorite spots. Somehow in those favorite spots, we feel our japa becomes better, which is true because having a pattern of doing things helps the mind become cultured. For example, waking up at the same time every day, eating at the same time every day, going to bed at the same time every day, doing the same activities at the same time every day, makes the mind disciplined. Therefore there is, oh, my work starts such and such time, my service starts at a certain time. It's not like, oh, whenever you feel like, we'll do Mangal Arati. Whenever you feel like, we'll have breakfast. If you don't feel like it, that's fine too. Whenever we feel like, we'll have a class. No, there's always a time. We know, 7:30 Bhagavatam class, 4:30 Mangal Arati, whatever, 9 o'clock breakfast, such and such time Arati, such and such time this service. That pattern, that order creates discipline for the mind. And the mind by nature is indisciplined. That's the whole idea. Arjuna is speaking to Krishna, oh, my mind is indisciplined. So the idea is to bring discipline, and discipline comes from order. And so Shuchau Dese is the first level of order, is things are clean. Place is clean. And second, he says, Samsthapyasanam Atmanaha. One should sit down comfortably. So comfortably, you see in Hatha Yoga, when you look at all the contortions of the body, it doesn't look so comfortable. But the idea is that all these contortions, this yoga, that asana, is to make the body flexible. Because as the body is flexible, energy flows through the body. In the next verse, he talks about the 10 kinds of airs. Prana, apana, saniruddhyat. So the idea is to balance the flow of air in the body. And when there is an imbalance of air, that is an indication of disease. Either vata, this is Ayurveda thing, so it may come up. So the idea is to let air pass, air flow through the body in such a way that the body is at ease, comfortable. Otherwise you find, you sit like this, back pain, the knee hurts or something, the neck hurts. And these are because those are the blockages. So it says sitting comfortably. So all these Hatha Yoga asanas are to facilitate the body to become supple, flexible, at ease. And it says, Asitarjva Anga, Asitarjva Arj Ruju Anga, Ruju Anga means a straight body. Bent like this or leaning. Leaning is an indication of not having strength. Leaning is a sign of weakness. So the idea is to say, you know, if you ever heard Prabhupada's japa tape, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Sit properly. Sit properly. Why? Because there was one devotee Prabhupada was chanting japa with, and he was leaning to the wall, and Prabhupada said, sit properly. Because when we sit properly, it allows for the physical to facilitate the mental, to make things easy to chant. We notice the more we lean, the sleepier we get. Because leaning is the direction of sleeping. So you're supposed to sit straight. It's said that the back, the neck and the head must be in one straight line. It's called Ruju Anga. Okay, physically one may do that. Then there is something to do internally. And that's the third line. Sthiram, Sukham, Samam. So sthiram. So steady is both on the physical side and the mental side. Physically steady, if you see people sitting, they're very fidgety. You know, some people sit with their knee bobbing or their foot bobbing, or they just can't sit. It's like a monkey, it's restless. It has to do something constantly. The hands are moving. No, it says sit steady. And so steady is in the mind, sthiram. We find that the mind is quite agitated, always. It is agitated by desire. In the Bhagavad Gita, shifting course here. In the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 15, Krishna describes how the material world is a perverted reflection. And he gives the analogy of a banyan tree. And he says, a banyan tree in this material world is an inverted banyan tree with its roots up and the leaves down. And so it's described that the reflecting surface, if you go to a water body, on a placid lake, you will see the reflection of the tree perfectly. Correct? But if the tree has, if the pond has ripples in it, then the reflection is distorted. So the placid lake, the analogy is that it's the mind. And the ripples in the mind are the desires. And because of our material desires, we have a very distorted picture of reality. And basically our desires are, and it's the wind that brings ripples on a water surface. And those winds are the modes of nature. And Krishna says it's the modes of nature that nourish the banyan tree. So you see the tree shaking, moving, it's all because of the desires in the mind that are agitating it. And because of that, there's always a distorted picture. And the distorted picture of reality then makes existence or survival in this world challenging. So steady, sthiram, is the culturing the mind to stay. And that steadiness of the mind comes from moving, consciously moving from the past and moving away from the future. Because part of the asthiram, the unsteadiness of the mind, is lamenting about the past or worrying about the future. These cause ripples in the mind. Lamenting about the past means, okay, we may not sit there and cry, but lamenting about the past means to try to make something of the past, force it to look like, or force the past to come into our present. For example, when we were children, we lived happily without any worries, any sense of responsibility. And it was like what we call carefree. And now when we have responsibilities coming up, we want to bring that same experience of carelessness, carefree, right into our present. And this is not possible, because life is moving. And as life moves, human form of life brings responsibility. And that responsibility is what makes us cultured human being. It makes us disciplined. Of course, nobody likes the responsibility, but because it's a burden on the shoulder. But it's that responsibility that awakens one's intelligence. It's called pragya. Because when there is responsibility, then you're forced to make choices. You have to consider, oh, this trade-off and that trade-off. Oh, I have to let go something because I have something else that I have to carry on. As children, we never considered these things. No. Whatever life presented, we were just happy playing. I know for myself. Other than playing, I didn't even think of anything else. Oh, whatever it is, what do you want to do? I want to play. Whether it was morning, afternoon, evening, we used to play cricket even at night. There were no lights. You had to guess where the ball is when someone throws it at you. It was really fascinating because you can't see the ball. Even if you hit it, the fielders cannot see it. But that was the thrill. You can't see the ball, but we played at night. That's all we care about, playing. But once you grow up a little bit, you figure out, okay, there's more to it than that. And as life progresses, more and more responsibility. So the mind becomes unsteady. So the instruction is sthiram. And that is goal. Now, how to make the mind steady? It said that the mind is steadied by a sense of purpose, by a goal to achieve. And the goal to achieve is, I want to become Krishna conscious. I want to facilitate life in such a way that my Krishna consciousness is steadily developing. My relationship with Krishna is becoming more and more defined. It has more clarity. There is sharpness in that picture. In photography, you have a camera and there is a picture. You want to frame it. Unless you move the lens and you have a sharp focus, you can't get the right picture. Everything looks, you may have an idea, oh, there are some people standing, there are some trees there, whatever. But without the focus, you can't see the beauty in the details. So we may have a hazy idea, I want to become a good devotee, I want to become Krishna conscious. But that, unless it is purely focused, our purpose-driven life, there was a book called Purpose-Driven Life. A purpose-driven life won't exist because the goal is hazy. And whenever the goal is hazy, we find that in our life there is disturbance because we don't know where we're going. So first is sthiram. Second is a sukham, happy. Sitting happily. Now in this particular case, sukham, sukham is two meanings. One is sitting comfortably in a posture that is comfortable. I'm focusing on the internal. particularly in this context, sukham, it doesn't mean necessarily I'm happy, I'm laughing, ha ha ha, not like that sukham. But the sense of sukham is being satisfied. Being satisfied is the opposite of being greedy. Greed and lust. We know that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says there are three gates to hellish condition. Anger, lust, and greed. So difference between lust and greed. Lust is this hankering. And greed is that how much ever you feed that hankering, it's never enough. Greed is like the engine that moves the vehicle of lust. And so a devotee is taught from the beginning to become satisfied. Any yogi is taught satisfied. Therefore you find in Bhagavad Gita that the sukham and samam, they go together. Being equipoised and being satisfied, they go together. This is how. By being satisfied, Krishna describes that whatever comes in one's life in the course of living, one should learn to accept and be satisfied with it without saying, I want more. Because the nature of lust is such that quantity brings happiness. And the nature of satisfaction is that quality brings happiness. It is the finer things. So lust means more of everything. And satisfaction is in the how. Lust is in the what and how many. And satisfaction is in the how. How am I, if one gets something to eat, then it is, oh, Krishna is giving me prasadam to eat. Yes, yesterday, I forget where. This is something about certain, I forget, some idea of what it means to nourish the body. Prahlad and I were watching something, that little clip. So this person was speaking. Of course, I'm speaking with not because I have realization. In fact, my realizations are opposite to what I'm about to say. But I'm sharing only because it's theoretical for me right now. The person said that our tongue is about 5 inches or 6 inches long. And the body is about 5 feet or 6 feet long. But what we eat is for the satisfaction of this 6-inch tongue and not so much for the 5 or 6 foot body. Because what nourishes the body may not always be pleasing to the tongue. And what is pleasing to the tongue may not be nourishing for the body. But lust is that in quantity, or whatever, that little tongue has to feel good about it. Like I said, I have absolutely no realization about this. So I'm almost being hypocritical here. But that was a very interesting point. So satisfaction is seeing beyond the thing and seeing in terms of relationship with Krishna. That brings satisfaction. Oh, this has come about. This is what Krishna has given me. Oh. When one doesn't see from where it is coming, and one only sees what is coming, then one is not satisfied. So this idea of sthiram sukham, sukham is that when Krishna is giving me, suppose, just a simple example, let's say we don't like Kerala. Okay? We don't like it. Let's just assume that Kishore Kishori manifested themselves in front of us. They're already here. But let's say we are in our home or wherever we are, and suddenly Kishore Kishori appear and they hand us, here, have a Kerala. Are we going to say, oh, Kerala? Really? Do I have to take it? Can I give it to other devotees? Can I share it with others? We won't worry. I guess our first, whatever comes from your hands is awesome for me. And definitely that Kerala will be sweet like anything because it's coming from Kishore Kishori's hand. But we won't say, oh, Kerala, I wish I had French fries. Because at that time we are seeing it from where it is coming or from whom. It's the same thing, except what our connection with Krishna is sort of removed. So when we see something, we don't know, oh, this is coming from Kishore Kishori. If Prabhupada bit a piece of Kerala and gave us, take it. Oh, not Kerala, Prabhupada. Something else. Whatever. We can't. We would grab it. Because the connection between that and who it is coming from is clear. So this is back to sthiram sukham samam, that the picture is clear, it's focused, it's coming from Kishore Kishori. Whatever it is, it's coming from Kishore Kishori. Whether I like it or not, it's coming from Kishore Kishori. So I'm satisfied. Oh, they're there. Another feature of satisfaction is feeling sheltered. When one feels sheltered, one is satisfied. And lack of shelter, one is agitated. And what the lack of shelter, then one has to work for himself or herself to find that shelter. And likely, most likely, one might grab onto or hold on to something that is material. And material by nature is unsteady. So if our shelter is unsteady, then we are unsteady. But we hold on to Krishna, Krishna is always satisfied. So we are also always satisfied. It's who we are holding on to. Because what we hold on to is what we get from them. If we hold on to a plank in the water and we stand on the plank, is it steady? No, because what we are standing on is water. Water by nature is not steady. The same plank on land, we can stand on it because land by nature is steady. So holding on to Kishore Kishori's lotus feet, Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, bring satisfaction because they by nature are satisfied always. Krishna is called Atma Rama. Prabhupada is Atma Rama. That is always satisfied within oneself. And third feature of satisfaction is to look for happiness within. The other day I had this, I guess, insight that happiness in the material world comes at a price. It's expensive. Because happiness in the material world is always in the objects. And those objects can only be acquired by money. Without money, you cannot acquire those objects. And therefore, happiness is expensive. But happiness for devotees is free. Because there's no money for it. It's about one's relationship with Krishna. And a person who doesn't have money can be as happy, perhaps happier than a person who has money. Because with money, the materialistic person will look for happiness to be bought and purchased. Happiness is within. So satisfaction, sthiram, samam. Now samam naturally comes from the other two, sthiram and sukham. Samam means equipoised. Not moved by happiness or distress. It's equipoised. Equipoised is purposeful. There's a purpose. I want to develop my relationship with Krishna. And material happiness and material distress are distractions. So even spiritual happiness and spiritual distress are distractions. So in the Nectar of Devotion, there's a pastime. There is a devotee of Krishna, one of Krishna's friends, who is fanning Krishna with a peacock fan. And as he's fanning Krishna with the peacock fan, because he's doing the service for Krishna, he feels great ecstasy. And one of the symptoms of ecstasy is tears of happiness. And because those tears are filling his eyes, he cannot see Krishna. So he checks his ecstasy just so that he can see Krishna and continue fanning him. He's not, I must have done great devotional service. I'm having these ecstatic symptoms. Ooh, la, la. Forgets about Krishna because it's a distraction. So it's not about my happiness or my distress. It is about serving Krishna. That's the beauty of being equipoised. They're not distracted. Not distracted by a material sense of happiness or a material sense of distress. Even the spiritual distresses. In the course of serving Krishna, there are so many distresses. Physical, mental, all sorts of distresses. And we experience all of it in chanting japa. We know what kind of struggle it is every day to chant japa. We try so hard to even hear one mantra properly, and it's like such a struggle. We have to walk, we have to sit, we have to contort our face, we have to pray, somehow hold on the beads, in between try not to fall asleep, and then also not get distracted, plan the day, do that, someone said that like that, why did they speak like that, why are they not, all that, you got to fight it just to hear Hare Krishna properly. We can't, it's just such a struggle. But we don't give up chanting Hare Krishna just because it's such a struggle. Nor do we give it up because I chanted Hare Krishna today, I had ecstatic feelings. No need to chant anymore, done. Or, such a nice feeling. No, we chant Hare Krishna still saying, Krishna, please engage me in your service. I need your service because without your service, I have nowhere to go. Yasya aprasada dunakati kutopi. I have nothing else to go to without your mercy upon me. Please let me chant, please, somehow. Yeah, that also we don't remember. Once in 16 rounds somewhere, we might remember, I have to pray to Krishna seeking for service. Right, we start, okay, today I'm going to chant japa. I'm going to ask Krishna to give me some service. And then 16 rounds later, I forgot to ask Krishna. I want some service to do. Whatever is the thing. So not being distracted, but having a purpose. I have to chant. I have to serve Krishna because that's my life. And so here it's talking about Om. Om iti. He says, Ruju angaha Om iti. And all of this, clean place, sitting straight, nice and like this, mind equipoised, is for one purpose, is to chant Om. The Prabhupada tells us that we chant Hare Krishna, the Jnanis chant Om, they're non-different. The goal is the same, only the specificity in the goal is different. By Omkara, one comes to fully realize one's transcendental nature and Krishna's nature as the absolute truth. And by chanting Hare Krishna, we have an interaction, a personal relationship with that absolute truth in the form of Krishna. So they're non-different in that sense. the depth of realization, the specificity of realization is different. It's the same. You can't, it's not that the jnanis realize something and the devotees realize something else. It's the same goal. Therefore, even they are happy because they're still, Omkara is still contacting Krishna. Just his impersonal feature. It's like, you know, yesterday was tax day. Everyone and anyone who's supposed to pay taxes paid their taxes. So that connect, that contact is with the government, IRS, Internal Revenue Service. We mail our tax returns or electronically post it, however. So we are contacting the government. Sure. A personal relationship is like actually whoever in the government, not the IRS guy, but let's say President Obama or someone, will call us and say, have you done your taxes? Can I help you with something? Well, he never makes the call to anyone. But it's, there's a more personal interaction. The government is no different from the person governing. But you don't get a sense of the persons. When we say IRS, we don't know who it is going to. It's going to a body called the IRS. That's the government. But there is a person or persons in the government. That's the difference. So here it's talking of Om. We are concerned with Hare Krishna. So those are some thoughts. Any comments or questions? Subhal Prabhu.
I have a couple of questions on if you can go a little deeply in these two ideas that you made in the class. One is about the past, present, and future. Yeah. That you said, you know, that we should avoid, we should try to keep the past and the future, but in the sense you specify the past in terms of lamenting and the future in terms of worrying, and one should be, you know, in the present. And I wanted to ask you that if you can give us your realizations in terms of how important, I mean, there are things in the past that we do that teach us, you know, that, you know, here's mistakes or things that worked. And then we see those things and we, you know, thinking on the past and maybe, you know, regretting something that led to, you know, a mistake. And then in the future, we there's something that we want to, the goals are in the future. You know, and we want to get there. So what's the balance that we have to be in the present and being able to take full advantage of the past and be very much focused on the future, sure. You know?
On Sunday, we were discussing Bhakti Shastri. We were in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And one of the points we discussed was for a person who doesn't have a spiritual life, their whole life can be characterized by three words: hari, worry, and sorry. In childhood, it's all about hari. Oh, this thing, then the next thing, then the next thing. We're always in a hurry. New job, just like that. Middle age is all about worry. How am I going to get this done? How am I going to save that money? How am I going to take care of this? How am I going to keep that? All this. And at old age, it's one is sorry. Oh, I missed that. Oh, I missed that opportunity. My life sucks. I cannot do anything now. So it's hurry, worry, and sorry. So now, for a person who's more thoughtful, is a purpose-driven life, the past is not useless. Only if it is learned lessons from it, such that I don't mess my present. So the past is that most people live in the past, waiting for the present to look like the past in certain aspects, especially happiness aspects. So one is living the past, waiting, when will things look like that? But the present keeps moving. And therefore Krishna says, Prashanta, Prasannatma, na shochati na kangshati. Na shochati is lamenting, oh, life's moving away, nothing's happening, why are things like this? Why are they not like how they were in the past? That's the lamenting. But if one learned from it that I made some big mistakes, so right now when the present is available, I don't make the same mistakes again. Let's say I was careless, callous and irresponsible in the past. And I learned some hard lessons, I lost opportunities or something. And I learned from it that now I need to be more alert about things. Then that's great. But I'm not living in the past, I'm living now. And as far as future, planning is a mode of goodness activity. Hankering is a passion activity. Hankering is that my present is agitated because I want a particular future to look in a way that facilitates my gratification. That's hankering. It's driven by passion, therefore greed is what takes us into my future. I'll like this, I will have this money, I will have that house, I'll have everything nicely done. It's the hankering. So that, but even planning for it is still hankering. So a plan that is the mode of goodness that keeps the mind organized is the purpose-driven plan. I want to develop in my service to Krishna. But when one thinks that I want to become a nice devotee of Krishna with these qualities, then one is still in the present thinking, okay, right now, how can I be humble and tolerant? Because I want to grow in that. So that kind of plan making is fine. But plan making about sense gratification or peace of mind, there's nothing called peace of mind in the future. And who's seen the future? We make a plan, but that plan making has to come with a sense of detachment. That this is my plan, and then there is Krishna's plan. But a materialist is worried because he is attached to that plan. Even slightly there is a change in it, and then the mind is agitated. Why is it like that? I had expected this. This was what I got. So satisfaction is very, very necessary. Does that address? I'll tell you a story of being satisfied. It was a very beautiful story. There was one saintly person who, like Srila Madhavendra Puri, had a vow that he will only eat what comes by providential arrangement. That he will not cook, he will not beg. If someone gives him something to eat, great. If he does, nobody gives him anything to eat, he will fast. This is how Madhavendra Puri also lived. So one such circumstance was he was traveling quite a bit and nobody had given him any food. So he had not eaten in many days. We know when we are hungry, how agitated the mind can get. But he was completely equipoised because remember the connection that today Krishna hasn't given anything. Okay, it's Krishna's expression. So after a few days, he found that someone gave him a very dry chapati. Dry chapati is when it's like papad. There's no juice in it. So he got a dry chapati. And we came, oh. He was still satisfied. Oh, Krishna has given me a dry chapati. He is very great. He is very, very kind to me. So he kept the dry chapati in front of him, closed his eyes, Mahaprasade Govinde, said his prayers. When he opened his eyes, the chapati was gone. So he looked around and a dog was eating it. So he closed his eyes And he said, Krishna, thank you for using me as an instrument to bring the dry chapati to the dog. Thank you. And he moved on. So his mind was satisfied regardless of how things were changing for him. Because the connection with Krishna was very clear. And Krishna as the orchestrator is very clear. For us, it's not always clear. We have to intellectually make that connection. Or maybe Krishna wants it this way. Okay, but why does he want it this way? Why does he not want it my way? So past and future, one is past is in ignorance because it's already gone. We cannot change anything about it except learn for now. In future, no one is seen. He doesn't have a sense of idea. Okay, I'll see the future, but we don't know. So planning only gives how to orient our present. Okay, this way, I want to move towards becoming steady in my Krishna consciousness. So what do I need to do now? It allows us to face our present issues, if done properly. But living in the future is, we neglect this and we are living in the future. That is, Krishna says, cannot be prasanna atma. Cannot be happy. Too much about the future. What will happen? What will happen? Yeah, sure.
It's about the point that you made on one being satisfied with what Krishna, you know, brings to you, and specifically, I was thinking, because you were making the point by highlighting, you know, say, examples of prasadam, and I was thinking when, in the situation, you know, I was thinking my situation that I'm supposed to be very careful about a particular diet, and sometimes you have many devotees that have that situation, and so you have to be discriminating with certain vegetables and certain foodstuff, and you are sometimes placed in a situation that you have to, no, I cannot take, you know, type of thing. What type of mindset, you know, would you say?
Subhal Prabhu, I don't know why I gave, I think I know why I gave prasadam related examples. Because that's the biggest challenge for me. I can take an insult, no problem, but I can't take bad food. I cannot eat bland, what is that, pumpkin and squash. I cannot eat it. I can take an insult. Someone insults me, I won't be so disturbed as I will be disturbed by seeing pumpkin on my plate. I'm being honest. It's a tough one for me. So anything I say is about me. So please understand. What kind of mindset it is? It is a... For different persons, it is different things. Okay? And it ranges from here to here, whatever that is. On the far end, one end of it, is a very highly gratification needing tongue. Tara madhi jivhati athi lobhamaya. This Bhaktivinoda Thakur has told us that jivha is ati lobhamaya. Ati lobhamaya is that it is extremely greedy. That's what it means. So that's this end, and I think I am in that end. And on this end is that one likes to make sure that everything has been nicely done for Krishna. Prabhupada is very particular. The prasadam should be very tasty. It was not some, because it is prasadam, that it can be any hodgepodge thing. You had to fry the potatoes or cook them in a particular way till it was in a particular color. In fact, the chapati should have certain spots on it. It should not be burnt. Puri should be puffed up. Milk should be hot. He was very particular. He's on this end of the continuum that he wants it all perfect for Krishna. He knows by eating it, oh, the cook made a good offering to Krishna. Krishna might have been pleased. And if it was anything less than that, he would chastise the devotee. What is this cooking? This is not good cooking. You know the story. Satsarup Maharaj made chapatis. He was his servant. And he brought to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, what is this? Chapati. This is not chapati. You go and learn from Yamuna how to make. So he had to go. He was a sannyasi. He had to learn from Yamuna Mataji. And she would teach him. Place the chapati this way. When these black spots come, you turn it on and you put it on the fire. It should exactly look like this. And Prabhupada was very particular. He would not eat cold chapati. He would ring a bell. Hot chapati had to come, you know, on his plate. But it's on this end of the continuum. And in between is a whole range of how the mind is at that moment. So here it is lobhamaya. Somewhere there is some gratification, some sense of comfort, comfort food as they call it. In some cases it is, I want to see nice taste for Krishna, and on this is Prabhupada, like, pakka, it has to be properly done for Krishna. You can't just cook something and put an offering. I don't know where, I can't answer for you, but I know where I fall, but it's the whole range in between. And then there is in between the other ranges also, where someone will not have a problem. Whatever is on their plate, they will eat. They may not like it, but they will never say anything about it. Someday salt is more, someday salt is less, not there. They're satisfied. This is what Krishna has given. I will eat it. So it's quite a range. So we can't tell the mindset just by a person's whatever comment about prasadam. I know for me where I am at. I can take other things. I can't take. I'm very picky. But I'm here. And that's my struggle. Aljiva ati lobhomaya. That's where I am at. It ranges. There's a lot going on with it. So, last comment. And did you have something? Was that a hand raise? Okay, it was a hand raise.
He covered a lot of ground today, Prabhu. Thank
Unfortunately,
you.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's.
I'm a bit greedy.
I was. I remember asking you once about offenses, and I believe you said. I said, what's the difference between a major offense and a minor offense? A minor offense is one that is directed towards you. A major offense is directed toward another devotee.
That's how I heard it.
That's a good way to live, I guess. I mean, you said you can take...
And I'm mostly disturbed about minor offenses.
And then I was thinking about the gopis, the eyelids. Do you remember about the eyelids and the gopis? They were upset that they're...
They chastised Lord Brahma for his bad creation.
Yeah, but they would have to blink from time to time. And that would, you know, that time would be, they wouldn't see Krishna.
Right.
Another thing is about the palate. I remember reading, Prabhupada said, because of the palate, people are going to hell. Because they can't discriminate what to eat, and they can't control. And... it just creates a hell of a situation, you know. And there's enough for every man's greed, but not every man's need. Oh, wait. There's
the other way around.
Yeah. There's enough for every man's need, but not every man's greed. I believe Gandhi said that. And then greed is considered to be worse than lust and anger because there's no end to it. But right. It seems to anger is, you know, somebody vents their anger and then it's kind of over.
Right.
And then with lust, I guess it becomes satiated. You know, they say that. And then we say, if we don't learn from the past, we are sure to repeat the mistake in the future. So that, I mean, maybe that was worded a little differently, little, I don't know, but that just came to mind. And also, as far as I remember this saying, I think Prabhupada said, attention to detail is a sign of love. So, and then we say, we hear, the future is uncertain and the end is always near. So we can plan, but we can't hanker. And then hankering and lamenting are a sign of passion. You know, we hanker for what we don't have and we lament for what we lost. So these are a few things that came to mind.
So and, there's this famous one, no? How to make Krishna laugh. You tell him your plans. Or once I met Cody, and he would saying, so I had said, man proposes, and he retorted, and God laughs.
Yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Mataji, you have something? About Subal Prabhu's question about...
Hare Krishna, Jnana Prabhu. I'm going to see if I can word this question because I'm trying to formulate it in my mind. you highlighted very much the necessity of the sense of purpose in life. And it's this very specific purpose that one knows that one is wishing to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's the goal-driven life. And you also highlighted the nature of the mind and the fact that in many cases the mind is not actually under the control of one's will, and particularly perhaps if the purpose-oriented life isn't there. So I guess what I'm thinking about and what's of interest is, should it be a case of that the mind is indeed not under the control of one's will, and indeed the goal is not clear. So indeed the life is aimless, purposeless. So the placement within a setting where persons are on the opposite end of the spectrum and actually have the purpose, the mind is directed by the will, and some activity is performed in the association of those persons. to what degree the first scenario brought closer to an understanding of the goal, or that the mind actually has some ability to come under the control of the will if there's that understanding, just by virtue of association?
Sure. Krishna says in the first verse of 7th chapter, Maya Sakta Manav Partha Yogam Yunjan Madashraya Asham Shayam Samagram Mam Yatha Gyasyasita Chunu. That if you want to have a purpose-driven life, you want to have a purpose that is clear, hear from me so that all doubts will be removed. That's the beginning of the bhakti section of the Bhagavad Gita. So the association and hearing about that purpose every day is important. So naturally an association, proper association will culture that. Before we met Prabhupada, many of us can say either we were aimless or that we were aiming for the wrong thing. But it's by Prabhupada's association, through his books and lectures and the Hare Krishna movement, that there is some semblance of that direction. I can speak for myself only in semblance for direction. Now there's also something else, that in an overall sense, I might have the purpose clear. But in the moment-to-moment sense, it may not be clear. And when that purpose is lost, then my indecision, indiscretion, or a wrong choice, or I shouldn't say wrong choice, a choice that has a consequence that doesn't fulfill the purpose is something that I commit to. So it's not only the general sense of purpose, but also the specific sense of purpose in every circumstance is what we are aiming for. So at least a general sense is a good, it's like the rudder that gives the boat direction, but then the boat needs to move in that. And if there's this person who doesn't have that purpose-driven, whatever, and here's a person with that very clearly purpose-driven, when they're two together, many things can happen. It depends on the person here. And that if they give their association, they can somehow take the other person with them. Otherwise, there'll be a clash. Oh, I have very clearly purpose-driven. You're not clearly purpose-driven. There's a clash. So giving association is also how to bring the person into the fold of thinking along the purpose-driven lines. That's that? Okay. I shouldn't forget my purpose. I have to drive to my purpose now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.